Welcome to Aspiro Life for June 1st, 2011. The intention with Aspiro Life is to share with you the latest and most up-to-date insights of the changes taking place on our planet. We invite your feedback and comments as to what would assist you as we move towards this collective awakening. If gaining deeper insight into your life is something you value, I would be happy to assist you. My practice focuses on people understanding themselves and those around them at a much deeper level. Through numerology and astrology, we examine the patterns, conditions, and people at play in your life to help you understand your divine path and fully embrace the changes taking place in you and around you. My website is www.aspirolifestyle.ca for more information. On with our show. Today I'm delighted to welcome a colleague and friend, Peter Tong. A fellow radio show host and educator, Peter has turned his attention to walking the true spiritual path of a metaphysical life. Using his experience and understanding of alchemy, meditation, teaching, and healing, Peter now empowers people to open up to their own expanding path to higher consciousness. Peter has a gift of transmitting sacred knowledge into a language we can all understand. Today, Peter and I will discuss his recent trip to the UK in March and his experiences at sacred sites in London, Stonehenge, Avebury, Glastonbury, and Tintagel. Peter, welcome to Aspiro Life.
Thanks so much, Cirilla. I really appreciate your introduction, and from what you said, I'm definitely on the right show today.
I'm glad you could join us. We've had all kinds of technical issues today, so Peter and I are happy to finally be connecting and having everything really worked out and smoothed out. We had to do a lot of breathing to get some of the technical issues worked out today, but we were both saying that that's where technology is. As vibrations are changing, you kind of just have to go with the flow with some of this stuff. But
absolutely.
Today I want Peter to explain to listeners, for those of you who don't know you, Peter, just give a brief introduction of your work and where it's taking you right now.
Okay, well, that's a big question, but I'll summarize very quickly. So I was a school principal, believe it or not, in an independent school on the west coast of Canada in Victoria, British Columbia. And I was always on a spiritual path, but what happened in the later years of my job as the principal was the so-called indigo children, who were all sort of 14 to 18 years of age in my school, started coming to me and telling me their incredible stories. And it became really evident to me that our current school system just didn't meet their needs. These are multidimensional children with abilities beyond our knowing. And so I made this crazy decision to leave my job and intended to open a school for these children, which still has not happened. It's almost 6 years now, Cirilla, since I made that crazy decision to leave my job. And all sorts of wonderful things have happened in the meantime. And interestingly, it's coming back as a focus in my world at the moment, which is really interesting. But in the meantime, I went off on this, my own inner and outer spiritual journey of really beginning to get a profound understanding of what this is all about. And I'll just mention two things. One is starting to get an understanding of the portals between the realms, the way in which the veil lifts. And this was actually began by helping people transition when they died.
Mm-hmm.
And then having this incredible opportunity to actually practice alchemy at the furnace. And I'm still working out the full benefit of that to me. This was within the first year. So 5 years later, I still don't fully yet appreciate what gift that was, although it's getting clearer and clearer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been on my own awakening journey, helping other people to awaken, helping people to heal sometimes from terminal illness, particularly cancer, and once people understand what the real deep issues are around themselves with that, we can bring them back to full health, which is just a beautiful, beautiful gift. Having watched people die from cancer and help them to cross over, to help them not have to cross over and come back to full health is an incredible, incredible gift. And so I've just been on this, as a teacher and as an educator, I've been on this incredibly profound journey of unraveling the mystery of life. And I'm getting closer and closer and closer. And this trip to England really for me was sort of brought everything together in a really neat package of going to these fabulous sacred sites in the south of England.
And so what brought you to England? Because obviously from your accent, that's where you come from originally. But what took you back there at this time?
Well, it's very strange. I left England 25 years ago. I was born and bred there and taught there for a while and then came to Canada. And two young guys in my town, Victoria, British Columbia, are calling themselves the Saints of British Rock. And they're planning to awaken the young people of today through their silly rock music show. And they were actually going to record some music in Abbey Road Studios and the Assault and Battery Studios in London. Mm-hmm. But they actually want to be on the Real Knights Quest as well as calling themselves Saints. So we've got this very strange mixture of these two young guys who sword fight wherever they go, and they make these silly songs, and it's rock music, and me taking them to the sacred knights. And I had never done anything with them before we left our shores. And the first experience we had was actually in the heart of Stonehenge, where they were recording music. They were doing their YouTube for their music, and also doing their sword fight. And I just couldn't believe that this happened, but also how quickly they were able to switch from their silliness into sacred space. And when we did a meditation right in the heart of the stones in Stonehenge, I knew that there was something profound potentially that could come out of this connection. So that's why I was there. So when they'd finished their recording, we then left them and went down to the sacred sites, and they began their Real Knights journey.
And having been to Stonehenge, I know how particular they are about. I'm astonished that they were given permission to even record a YouTube video there. Was that something that just kind of happened by chance?
Or? Oh, no. They had to go through a whole formal process and pay some money and get some insurance. And, yeah, they went through a full process with that, yeah.
And so when you were there, what was that experience like with them when you saw this transition, basically?
Well, there were two or three things. First of all, I'd like to say about Stonehenge and then weave them into the picture, because really interestingly, they're wanting to awaken the young people through sound, through music, and Stonehenge is all about sound. And we were very fortunate to have with us a woman called Maria Wheatley, who's a very gifted dowser and understands the stone circles of Stonehenge and Avebury very well. And what she demonstrated to us and what we engaged in, we only had 1 hour, and we got all this done in 1 hour, was including their music as well as our working with the stones and meditation. What she demonstrated to us quite clearly with the dowsing rods is that if you look at one of those giant megaliths in Stonehenge, those megaliths are giving out sound frequency all the time outside the audible range. And with dowsing rods, you can douse the surface of the megaliths and find the 7 bands of vibrational frequency that the stones give out. And so this is exactly the same as our own chakra system. The stones have their own. There are 2 below the surface and 5 above the surface. And those bands have now been measured in terms of the frequency of sound being emitted. And so one of the things people need to understand is when you look at that stone circle, there's a communication taking place between the stones through sound frequency. And the heel stone, which is outside the circle, is where the sun rises on the summer solstice. And I just want your listeners to understand this very, very profound and important moment. And that is, on the summer solstice, as the sun just rises, hopefully you can see this in your mind's eye, as it rises over the heel stone, in that moment there's this incredible opportunity to capture all of this energy in this sacred moment, and all the stones begin to resonate with their vibrant frequencies and focus that energy into the center of the stone circle, into the altar. And you get this incredible connection between the earth, the sun, and the stones. And what I'm beginning to realize now in the work that I'm doing is that these sacred stone circles are incredibly powerful. And there's a wonderful guy, Michael Tellinger, who's going to be on a North American tour very soon, who has discovered this massive set of stone circles in southern Africa, just outside Johannesburg. And he's absolutely convinced that in the old days that the people knew how to generate sound through these stones to create all the energy that they needed. And now we are, in our own technological world, beginning to develop things called phasers rather than lasers, where sound frequency is used rather than light frequency to do useful things. And so we're returning back to these ancient technologies that were well known. So Stonehenge has that ability. So we have the guys performing their rock show amongst the stones, and then doing their sword fight outside the stone circle. But what became really clear to me when we went into quiet meditation afterwards, that the stones themselves were longing for human connection. Because now when you go to Stonehenge, you can't walk amongst the stones. You walk in this big circle outside the stones, mm-hmm. in the wrong direction, anti-clockwise, and you don't get anywhere near the stones. And what I sensed and felt deep in this stone circle, and by the way, you can't touch the stones when you're in that circle. That's the one rule. You are not allowed to touch the stones, which is absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the heart of that, and we had all this joy and fun and celebration at 6:30 in the morning, you could just sense that the stones were so happy that we were in there, but just wanting to be embraced and touched and part of the action. And we went off into a group meditation, and then people just went off and found their quiet space sitting close to or standing next to or standing underneath one of the great megalithic arches of the energy present. It was an absolutely beautiful and profound moment, and the guys got it. There are four members of the band, the manager and me, the six of us, and there were some other guests that were also involved on that day. But at that point, I knew that we were going to have a tremendous, tremendously successful trip.
And that was the first place you visited?
No, we actually started in London, and I had this ridiculous, thing. I need to say, Sibylla, that the synchronicity that I've always known about, mm-hmm. when you start really connecting with your real path, just get ridiculous.
It is.
And very quickly, I'll just tell you about London, because it is an important piece in the story. So they're recording in London, and I'm not involved in the recording, and about 3 days before I left, through Robert Bovall, who's a wonderful researcher in this field, he was the person that first discerned that the three pyramids, the Great Pyramids of Giza, are a reflection of the three stars of Orion's belt.
Right.
And he was doing some research on the grand plan that Christopher Wren designed for the new city of London after the Great Fire in 1666.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Bovall was telling me that that he presented his plans to King Charles II on 9/11, 1666. So whoever did the Twin Towers, whoever that was, whichever conspiracy you believe in, mm-hmm. they chose that date, 9/11, because it reflected the Masonic ideal. Whoever did it knew we're making a point. So Christopher Wren on 9/11, 1666, presented the new plan for the city of London, which was burned to the ground, to King Charles II. And then I found out that what he actually did, and this is from a book that Robert is now updating, which was called Talisman, is now going to be called The Master Game. As you know, Sula, this is the beautiful thing about being a radio host. You get all this incredible information.
Information, absolutely.
Paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I then found out from his old book, Talisman, that in fact what Christopher Wren was trying to embed over the streets of the city of London in the new design was a full tree of life, a Kabbalah.
Ah.
What the heck was Christopher Wren doing?
Mm-hmm.
So the next day I had the chance to I had a free day. So I jump on the tube and I'm in North London and I end up in Bank, which is the financial district.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely true. I come out of the underground in Bank, and I'm right. There's a little bit of sidewalk right in the middle of the center of Bank, and I come up in this spot from the underground, and I look north, and I look, and there are four roads going off directly in front of me,
mm-hmm.
and each road has down it some sort of a marker, a church spire or a monument. Then I turn around, face the other way, facing south, and there are four roads going off. Exactly the same, the central road being heading south to St. Paul's Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, my God, it's an eight-pointed star right mm-hmm. in the heart of the Tree of Life in downtown London. And no one knows.
Wow.
I later found out that's the throat chakra. It's the communication center. And the Knights mm-hmm. Templars always worked on eight-pointed stars.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, my God, this is crazy. But it's real. And then I found out that it actually wasn't perfect. And then I found out, and I actually have no recollection of how I know this, but I read somewhere that his Tree of Life plan was not put into place perfectly because people would have had to have sold land to do it, and of course they just had a big fire, so no one had any money or any belongings left, so that wasn't agreed to. But he was involved in the implementation of the new plan, so what he did was the best that he could. So then I went to visit St. Paul's Cathedral, because St. Paul's Cathedral did get burnt to the ground, and so he had freedom in how he built St. Paul's Cathedral, and unbelievably, and you can check this, there's a floor plan that demonstrates it quite clearly, St. Paul's Cathedral is itself based upon the Tree of Life. And it's not, therefore, a Christian church. It's the spiritual center of the Tree of Life. It's the heart chakra of the City of London. And I could go into a lot of detail about what I discovered, but I'll just say a couple of things. When you're in St. Paul's Cathedral, there's only two major sarcophaguses to famous dead people. Most people in London are in Westminster Abbey. Mm-hmm. The two guys who are there are the Duke of Wellington and Nelson. And obviously they were really significant in Britain retaining its empire. I'd already seen the Duke of Wellington's monument, which was at the throat chakra in Bank. And, of course, Nelson's column is at the base chakra. So the backbone of the whole thing runs along the Strand and Fleet Street and comes out at Aldgate, which is the crown chakra. And I'm thinking, why would Aldgate be so important, being the crown chakra?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went there to find out what's there. And Aldgate's not a particularly special place, except when you come out of the tube station again, you stand at the center of the road and you can see the four roads coming back to the point of the crown. So there's no doubt it was the crown chakra. And then I realized, I looked around me, I was standing in the Jewish quarter.
Mm.
Why was the Jewish quarter important? Well, it's the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And what Christopher Wren, I believe, and I don't know this from anybody else except my own research and my own intuition, what I believe Christopher Wren was doing was attempting to reconnect the people of London to their true heritage bloodline, which was through the House of David, through Jesus, Mary Magdalene, King David, Solomon, going back to Moses and Miriam, and then back into Egypt, to Akhenaten, and through to Lemuria and Atlantis. I think he was hooking the whole thing back up, because there were a few imposters around at that time. Some of the people who were kings and queens were not really of the true bloodline, that didn't have the activated DNA cycle. And, of course, that brings us straight through to Prince William, who's just got married, because from my research, he actually is the first person of the real true bloodline to become the next king. And that's another whole discussion. But I believe that, I know that through his mother's bloodline, the Spencer lineage, goes back to the Vernon lineage, all the way back to the original Merlin. And so that is the true bloodline relative to the current royal family.
And you're right, Peter. There's so many questions in there. But one of the things that I mean, especially in that part of the world, I want to understand, because you've investigated this a lot more than I have. But with the Michael Mary line does not go through London, from what I understand, correct?
That's correct. No, it does. Yeah.
So what would you say is the spiritual significance at this point in time? I mean, if we're talking, you know, what was it, 1666? From 1666
yep.
until now, what would you say the spiritual significance of London is, given that imprint was created at that time? And where's London today from a spiritual significance?
Well, that's a great question, and there are two or three answers I would give. The first one is that there's been a fair amount of research done on the ley lines that, for example, connect up all the capital cities. So if you look at Glasgow and Cardiff in Wales and London, there's a triangle there which is of a sacred geometrical structure. Also, all of the capital cities, Paris, London, New York, Washington, the Vatican, all have this spiritualized energy of a dome and an obelisk. So on the embankment in London, there is an obelisk, a Cleopatra's Needle, it's called, and St. Paul's Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to the Washington Monument and the Capitol Building and so on and so on, and all these cities have been set up for this energy to be used, and the Freemasons sometimes have a bad reputation, but I believe that their original intention was to do good things, to create this connection between heaven and earth through these grids within the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So the Michael Mary line, which is the most famous ley line that runs across England, which does connect into with Glastonbury and Avebury and around the world to places like Mount Shasta, Lake Titicaca, and so on, the Great mm-hmm. Pyramids. But there are, within that system, minor ley lines and structures that are also basically been left available to us to work with when we return back to sufficient levels of consciousness mm-hmm. that we can begin to understand this, and that's exactly what is happening now. Then we can start spiritualizing the energy and transform the place back to its original state. So I perhaps should just talk about another wonderful guest I had, Walter Cruttendon, who talks about the great cycles of consciousness. He firmly believes that we actually are a binary star system, with Sirius and the Sun being the two stars of our system, mm-hmm. and that the precession of the equinoxes actually is not a precession as described by the scientists, but it's to do with our rotation to do with Sirius and the Sun. But we go through these cycles of time of higher and lower consciousness, and he believes that in 500 AD, when King Arthur walked the earth, which is significant in this whole story that I'm unraveling with you today, was the darkest hour of modern time. So right. 500 AD was when we were at our lowest level of consciousness ever in recent history. And in previous golden eras, when we were highly conscious, those beings put things in place so that when we reawaken to that level of consciousness, mm-hmm. we'd be able to work with those tools. Mm-hmm. So, for example, 5,000 years ago in the period of Akhenaten, and Nefertiti and Tutankhamun was the last time when we did live in a golden era of peace. And you'll find 5,000 years ago all around the world, and it fits into the Mayan calendar as well, these structures were put in place. They were made available so that when we returned to this level of awareness, we could start working with them.
But when we're talking about Christopher Wren, we're talking, even though it's, 500 years ago, it's still fairly recent. So is there something that was imprinted at that time to take us through this shift unique to London?
I'm not sure if it's unique to London, but let's just talk about that too. So within these 5,000-year cycles, again, this is just my own belief, and there may be mm-hmm. others that agree with it, it seems to be that about every 400 or 500 years, people come back who are relatively enlightened relative to the rest of the population mm-hmm. to give a bit of another kickstart in. So you're looking round about the 1,000, the 1,100 mark. You're looking at the Crusades and the Templars, and there was a big injection of energy there. The 1,500s, 1,600s, all that time around Queen Elizabeth and Shakespeare and the Rosicrucians, Francis Bacon, the beginning of the Renaissance, that was another time, and that was Christopher Wren's time. And so in the mid-1600s, Francis Bacon developed something called the Invisible College. And that really was the beginning of the input of the frequencies that we are now returning to, which also included the founding of the United States as well, which followed on from that. So there's been a definite injection of energy at that time. Now, Christopher Wren, really, I mean, you just mentioned him again. He kept coming up on our journey, and again, synchronistically. So when we were in Stonehenge, Maria Wheatley pointed out to me that Christopher Wren's graffitied one of the stones in Stonehenge with his signature. So you can see Christopher Wren quite clearly, he's in Stonehenge. And then amazingly, when we were down in Glastonbury and talking about the landscape zodiac, which we must get to before we finish this discussion, because that's probably the most important feature of all of this from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We met in a little village hall called Butley, and we were in Butley because it's the actual centre of the zodiac in Glastonbury. And we just began our conversation with the people we were meeting, who are the experts on the landscape zodiac there. And this lady pointed out that there's this manor house just outside where we were sitting, which Christopher Wren used to live in and own. So he just kept cropping up. So he definitely knew what he was doing, and he was definitely involved in activating these grid lines and getting them set up for some future time. They were very aware that we were going to be coming back consciously in the future, so they just laid out some pieces of the jigsaw puzzle for us.
Right, right. All right, so from you landed in London, you went to Stonehenge, and then what happened after that?
So Avebury was the next port of call, and what's important about Avebury is Avebury lies right on the Michael Mary line. Mm-hmm. If anybody goes to England and you want to go to Stone Circle, Avebury is the place to go because the village of Avebury is right in the center of the Stone Circle. So they can't shut it down. They can't close it off. So you have complete freedom to hug the stones, to sit with the stones, to wander through the stones. And it's a magnificent, absolutely magnificent place. And why it's so important today is the Michael Mary line, for people that don't know, was originally seen as a ley line, an energy grid line that ran across the whole of England from Cornwall in the bottom southwest, coming out on the east coast. So it was a southwest-northeast line. And Glastonbury and Avebury and many of the stone circles in Cornwall lie on this line. But it's not a single line. It's like a DNA helix. There's a masculine line, the Michael line, and a feminine line, the Mary line, and they keep crossing over each other in certain points. And in Avebury, there's an avenue, which is just a beautiful avenue you can walk along. It's probably about half a mile long. And it's got masculine stones on one side, feminine stones on the other. The masculine stones would be your typical obelisk-type phallic structure. Mm-hmm. And the female stones are like big diamond-shaped structures. And you walk along the avenue, and you're walking along the Michael line, and then you get to this particular spot after you've crossed the road. It's neat because you're within the village, as it were, as you're doing this. And the Mary line comes in from over a hillside, and they come in and they meet at this point. And with dowsing rods, you can douse the energy. And this place where they meet, there used to be a stone. Unfortunately, it's gone. That was called the Ring Stone, and it's the stone where people got married.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the place where the masculine and feminine were in perfect balance and harmony.
Wow.
In the old days, Freddie Silver is another great guy in this mm-hmm. area to talk about the fact that people used to pass their babies through the hole in that stone because the energies are perfectly balanced. So any discordant energies that any child was carrying would just be completely healed and released by passing them through the ring stone. And that became a banned practice by the church. Because you didn't need the church. If you passed your kids through the stone, that was the end. It was all done. I jest, but.
I think that would be the worth the plane trip today.
Well, amazingly, a couple of the people I connected with in Glastonbury did get married there quite recently. Very, very tuned in people. It's just a beautiful energy flow. Then the lines merge together and they separate off again and go their way. And why this is so important is that we, as individual human beings right now on the planet, have a responsibility to balance our sacred feminine and sacred masculine within ourselves mm-hmm. so that our relationships with others become balanced and harmonized. So to do this with intention with yourself, to balance yourself energetically, is a very powerful process in Avebury. And it's just a beautiful place anyway. So anybody... It's going to go to England, and it's also very much where all the crop circles come up there as well. So it's just a great place to be.
Energetically, it's a very strong area to go
very
and
strong.
Visit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then we headed off to Glastonbury and spent some time in the Abbey there. And the Glastonbury Abbey, again, the absolutely stunning energy. It's an Abbey that's got the big walls of its original structure still stand and not much else. But because of that, you can see pretty clearly, it's a beautiful grassed meadow, pretty clearly how it all was laid out. And again, with dowsing rods, you can do some beautiful dowsing of, again, the Michael Mary line that runs right through the abbey. And there's a grave site of King Arthur and Guinevere there, which who knows whether it's a real one or not. But I'll just mention that for a moment. When people go, is this authentically true? Is this real? What happens is when there's an imprint from the ethers to say it is, then actually the energy will build there anyway. So it actually
right.
doesn't matter. There is an energy of Arthur and Guinevere there because people believe that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that's required energetically to a certain mm-hmm. degree. So there is an energy of them there, and there's this incredible dowsing you can do around their gravestones where the Michael Mary line actually does a Saturn square or diamond right around the gravesite.
Oh, wow.
And there's some powerful spots along that grid line.
And that's also, isn't it Isn't it annually? Don't they have a big music festival or something?
They do, yeah. So again, it's interesting. Glastonbury puts together again music with the sacred, although I don't think all the activities of the festival.
No, probably not.
But the actual, again, it's interesting that music is definitely part of the energy of Glastonbury in this huge festival that they have there.
Mm-hmm.
And the energies there are just absolutely stunning. Up on the top of the tour, there's a labyrinth that you can walk to get to the top of the tour, which done properly takes all day. Or you can just walk straight up to the top of the tour in about 15, 20 minutes, but very powerful energies. And a lot of people believe that there is a civilization that exists underneath the tour of the fairy kingdom and the sort of lower earth realms, which I'd be pretty confident is true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a magical place.
Well, in one of my recent interviews with Drunvalo, he was talking about the plasma beings and them gravitating. He was being specific to Mexico, but that they gravitate at these energetic points. So, you know, when there's any kind of rumor about that, it's something that obviously it piques your attention to the fact that they're existing, and that is an element of this vibration that we're moving into that's becoming more and more recognized. It's not only the extraterrestrials, it's the interterrestrials that, you know, we have to acknowledge as our ancestors and brothers and sisters, etc. So not to digress onto that topic, but I just wanted to put that in there because it was something that recently came up very strongly for Drunvalo on what he's been experiencing.
It's actually not a digression, Suella. It's actually a segue into what is the most important message that I have for you and your listeners today, which is what I've come to know. And the next piece I'll talk about is the landscape zodiac. But just to follow up on what you've just said, what I've come to realize is that the key thing that we need to do today, without any shadow of a doubt, is to reconnect the extraterrestrial realms, the star systems of our beautiful universe,
mm-hmm.
with the inner earth, with the very Mother Earth itself, and act ourselves as the bridge between the two. So the extraterrestrials and the interior terrestrials, the Mother Earth, Father Sky, and us is what needs to happen. Without any doubt, in my mind, that is what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been given this magnificent tool to work with, which you will absolutely love. It's right up your alley because it's all connected to astrology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's connected to astrology and the landscape. So we have this remarkable series of synchronicities that only began last November here in Victoria, where British Columbia, where I live. And what we discovered was that Kathleen Maltwood was the woman who first discerned that this landscape zodiac existed, and that was in Glastonbury in England in the 1920s and 1930s. And she moved directly from Glastonbury to Victoria in 1938, just before the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
So we became aware that there was this very, very important and strong connection between the two, that is Glastonbury and Victoria, through Kathleen Maltwood. And then around about January, February, it was becoming clearer and more evident to us that there's almost certainly a landscape zodiac here in our hometown of Victoria.
Wow.
When I got this gift of going to England to work with these guys on this sacred site journey, we planned to meet up with the people that work with the landscape zodiac in Glastonbury today.
Mm-hmm.
And that has led us on this phenomenal journey. So let me just tell you a bit about what the zodiac is.
Please.
Kathleen Maltwood is a very gifted spiritual theosophist who lived in the 20s and 30s in England. She was asked to interpret a document called The High History of the Holy Grail, which had been translated from French into English. And it was a grail questing journey, but rather than seeing it as a metaphorical journey, she decided to follow it literally. She made the assumption that a place called Cadbury Castle, which is 11 miles southeast of Glastonbury, was the original Camelot, and she followed the instructions in the document, and it took her to a place called Somerton, which was the capital of Somerset in England, and also 11 miles from Glastonbury in the southwest now. And she discerned that within the landscape around Somerton was a massive lion. And the landscape means literally hills and valleys and old tracks and streams. So the belly of the lion was actually the River Carey in Somerset. And then so this developed, and then she discovered this giant effigy of a man in the landscape. And so it went on, and she had this revelatory moment at some point in this process. And she'd been able to get the Royal Flying Corps, who were the original RAF in the 1920s, she must have had some influence, because she actually got them flying over this landscape, taking photographs of these features. She eventually worked out that it's about a 10-mile diameter circle within which are housed all 12 astrological symbols literally carved out in the landscape. And if you go on Google Earth now, and you Google Earth and you look at Glastonbury, you know where you're looking, you'll see these features today. It's absolutely remarkable. And she also realized that not only were all the effigies or the symbols in the landscape, but it was also a gift for us to work with in our ability to transcend all of the lower human frailties and egos related to the 12 archetypes. So whether you're talking about astrological signs, whether you're talking about the apostles, whether you're talking about the 12 labors of Hercules, the 12 priestesses, it's all the same energy that we have to understand and work with and transcend if we're going to step off the wheel of karma.
Right.
So this was the gift that had been given to us, she believed, by the Sumerians, actually, 2700 BC, almost 5,000 years ago, again, back to that 5,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so what then we learned was that the people in Glastonbury, a wonderful guy, I don't know if you know him, Cyrilla, John Wadsworth, who's a very gifted astrologer in England,
mm-hmm.
and a guy called Anthony Thorley, who's really the expert on landscape zodiacs in England today, the two of them set up this phenomenal thing, which is called the alchemical journey. And what they do is they go every month, they go in a workshop situation, and they go through all of the energies of each of the 12 astrological signs within that sign, within the month of that sign, and do all sorts of astrological work and work with creativity to bring out of the unconscious all of our stuff related to those signs. And then they go and walk the landscape feature itself and do some ceremony and walking meditation. And this process over a 12-month period, once a month every month, essentially gives you the opportunity to transcend the 12 archetypes and become free of the wheel of karma and step onto a path of enlightenment. So when I heard that, I thought, well, we've got to do that back in Victoria, you know.
So we had
incredible synchronicity. So while I was in Glastonbury doing the work with them and getting an understanding of it, my colleague, who seems to have this phenomenal connection with Catherine Maltwood here in Victoria, was discerning all the different features, the different landscape features, and it's all done through synchronicity. And I'll explain why it is in a moment as well, which is another phenomenal concept that people need to understand. And so began this sacred alchemical journey. And then we find out that Catherine Maltwood's birthday was April the 17th, which, of course, is in Aries. And mm-hmm. Aries is the first sign. And we already knew where Aries was. And so on April the 17th, on her birthday, we did our very first workshop to work with the energies of Aries and go to the landscape feature here in our own town of Victoria.
And how was that?
It was absolutely phenomenal, because we didn't know what we were doing. But, you know, as you know from Aries, it doesn't matter. In Aries, you just make a start. You go for it. You go with enthusiasm.
You take a step.
You take steps. And if you make some mistakes, that's fine. But what was remarkable was we knew where the Aries is a paschal lamb, so it's a lamb looking back over its own shoulder. Mm-hmm. And we got the features, and some of the features here in Victoria is the coastline, which is really, really interesting. And we went, all these different synchronicities, but at the base of the lamb, there was a road called Lanes Road, L-E-Y-N-S. So I said to my colleague, Mary, there's going to be a ley line there.
Mm-hmm.
So we go there. And not only was there a ley line, but there was a little park called Mantrite Park. We went into the park, and I realized very quickly there was a stone circle there.
Uh-huh.
All these stones had been destroyed, but they'd been cut off. So they were in the ground, but not above the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But when you went and stood on them, they were all lined up perfectly. There is one very large stone and a few stones above the surface, but it became evident. And then I did some dowsing. Now I was an expert dowser for Stonehenge. and there were two ley lines crossing right in the heart of this stone circle. Couldn't believe it. So we had a full-day workshop, an eight-hour workshop, and we did all the astrology. We have our own resident astrologer, Melanie Lichtinger, who's just great. Did all the astrology and talked about some of the aspects. And then we did some creative work. We did some painting. We did some creating mandalas and went out into the garden and just allowed ourselves to bring all of our Aries energy up. And we'd already talked about what that involved in terms of the light side and the dark side of Aries and what we want to transcend and keep and what we want to let go of.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the big thing about Aries is butting heads and not getting mm-hmm. ourselves involved in confrontation, not mm-hmm. smashing our way through and causing a whole lot of collateral emotional damage to people.
That's right.
But rather focusing on the upside of Aries, which is this very positive, upbeat energy to get things moving, get things going, starting new projects, which is what this was. And then we had 50 people in the end, and we took them all out into the landscape feature, and I showed them how to douse the area and to get a sense of the land. And then we did a ceremony, buried a crystal so we could start connecting all the different features around the place. It was just fantastic. And 2 weeks ago we did our Taurus, which was also great. And we've gone from the pioneer land of Victoria now into the settlers, where the farmers settled. And in the landscape zodiac, Taurus is just the head of the bull. And absolutely amazingly, there is only one maize in Victoria. And our maize, it's a corn maize, is actually in the mouth of the bull. And why that is significant is because part of the second labor of Hercules is Hercules going off to find the Cretan bull and mastering the energy of the bull, which is all about the full embodiment of the energy of Taurus. So we were able to continue our journey. Of course, now we're into Gemini. And what I'm realizing is that these are not like flat effigies in the landscape. They're all interconnected through all the mythological stories that we know about. And I'm now becoming a bit of a historian. I was a chemistry teacher, and so I didn't do much history in my education, but all of the mythological stories from Greece and just the ancient stories and all the astrology, I know Prometheus is going to come up in Gemini, for example.
Right.
So it just becomes this adventure with all this synchronicity that takes place. And what's happening really, though, is that the human kingdom are reconnecting the earth with the sky and the stars, because obviously, as you know, it's not just the constellations that are involved in this process, it's the stars associated with the constellations. So in Taurus, you're looking at the Pleiades and the beginning of Orion, and Aldebaran is very important as the eye of the bull. It's the enlightenment point. So when you walk through the meditation, you go from the sacral chakra, which is very much the bull energy in the second chakra, and you go up to the throat chakra, which is all about creative expression through the voice, mm-hmm. through poetry, through singing, obviously, through music. And then you go even further and you go up into the third eye, because it's the third eye of the bull. And some of the Cyclops stories are associated with Taurus and the second labor of Hercules. And so you transcend this energy from all the juicy sexual energy of Beltane and May and fertility, and you transcend that and bring it up into the third eye, into enlightenment. And so you've got this very, very beautiful metaphysical walking journey through your own landscape, and you're creating your own myth. It's just phenomenal.
Now, Peter, just so I understand this a little bit, because I want to make sure that the picture of what the landscape astrology is, that it's clear for people. So when you're, for example, these sites, they are, or seemingly, they're almost in a perfect circle?
Yes, there's a certain formation. So there's a sort of an outer edge, and there are one or two of the symbols slightly inside. So Taurus is not on the outside edge. Mm-hmm. In the zodiac in Glastonbury, Libra is not a scale. It's a descending dove.
Right.
Cancer is not a crab, it's a boat. It's actually the Argo Navis boat belonging to Jason of the Argonauts. So if you just look at a little sequence here, Cancer is Argo Navis, the boat, one of the Gemini twins is Jason of the Argonauts in the back of the boat, and he's going after the golden fleece of the ram, which obviously is Aries. And obviously you can begin to see, you can go into incredible deep detail, and what happens is as the more you get into it, the more it reveals itself. It's a never-ending journey, which is just phenomenal. And we're novices in this. We've only known about this since November, December, and obviously we've just started our journey. In Glastonbury, actually, interestingly, they're on their third year, and this is going to be their last year. So their third year is going to be our first year. So we're doing a nice little overlap with Glastonbury and Victoria, and there's no doubt that Catherine Mortwood created a portal between the two. And I just should tell you very quickly, the way she created that portal between the two was brilliant. I'm not sure if your listeners will know the story of the holy thorn tree that Joseph of Arimathea brought from the Holy Land when he brought the Holy Family out of Jerusalem after the crucifixion, because they weren't safe to be there. He was the guy with the money. He had tin mines in Cornwall and was part of the Roman trading routes and had ships. So he brought some of the Essene community and the Holy Family from Jerusalem to southern France and the extremities of Britain on the west side of the UK, including Avalon, including Glastonbury. And he planted this holy thorn tree. It was actually his staff, just a bare staff which is stuck in the ground. And miraculously that turned into this thorn tree, which flowers to this day at Christmas. And Catherine Mortwood bought a graft of that tree with her when she left England and came to Victoria, and it's actually planted at the University of Victoria on a ley line that connects up her original house to the university. So we have this connection that's been made by her. She knew exactly what she was doing. She was a very gifted spiritual woman who did everything with intention and on purpose.
Well, Peter, is it your sense then that there's just these two locations with this landscape astrology wheel, or do you feel that there's more?
They're all over the place.
Okay.
I think there are about 40 now that have been discerned.
Identified?
In the UK alone. There's quite a famous one. If people go online, they can look up the Kingston Zodiac. Mm-hmm. A woman called Mary Kane followed on the work of Catherine Mortwood when she left England and came here. She's also died now, but she did a lot of work on what's called the Kingston Zodiac, which is all around London, actually. And there's a Zodiac in Rennes-le-Château in France as well.
Okay.
So there are, and I'm sure many of them have not yet been discovered. And I should just say, it's not necessary to actually understand your own Zodiac. We were given this gift of this tool, of this realization and recognition that we are uncovering. Mm-hmm. But actually on my radio show, I've had a few people on who are connected to this, but on my Heart-Centered Journey Ambassadors of Light program, people are doing this alchemical journey all around the world because it's such a profoundly and wonderful thing to do. And you don't need to have your own landscape zodiac known, because all you need to do is to begin discerning certain sacred sites within your own town, your own village, and start connecting up some of the synchronistic dots. So where is there a connection to the bull? Where is the connection to the ram or the lamb? Because, I mean, where the center of the ram's head in Victoria is called Lambrick Park. It's now a baseball field, but it used to be a farm that had sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And so all you need to do is just start paying attention to your own landscape and your own city and what happens there and some of the names. All this gets put together through ridiculous synchronicity. So let me explain to you why that is the case, because people really struggle to see how can that name mean that? How can anybody have thought to do that? Well, they didn't think to do it. It was done unconsciously, but it was done for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Thorley, the landscape zodiac expert in England, is now working on his PhD, and one of the pieces of that puzzle is something called back causation, which quantum physicists are now also studying. Let me explain what back causation is. It's profoundly important, and I'm now working with it with some really interesting results. So let's go back to Catherine Mortwood discerning this landscape zodiac in the 1920s, 1930s. And she has this revelatory moment. Boom, there it is. the landscape and we can work with it. In that moment, she fixes in the matrix of all that is, that energy, that awareness, that realization, that recognition. And then everybody else in the past who had to contribute to that awareness does their piece. Some people consciously, some people completely unconsciously, to create that moment of synchronization for her. And all the people who have contributed to that have no awareness that they have, but they have.
Right.
And that's how back causation works. It's a synchronization of events to create this very special moment of realization for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so how this works is all the names of the streets get put in place. No one knows why they made that street the way they did, but there we are. I'll give you one example in our landscape. Part of the mythology of the whole structure is that King Arthur is seated on his white horse, which is Sagittarius. So the centaur is King Arthur on his horse, and Sagittarius has a bow, and from the bow, King Arthur fires the arrow, and he fires the arrow into the bull's eye,
mm-hmm.
the eye of Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
And Guinevere actually lines the arrow up for him along something called the Fingers of Law. And I found this out when I was in Glastonbury. So when I come back to Victoria, my partner in this work, Mary, said to me, I found out where the head of the bull is. She said, yeah. I said, the bull's eye is called in a little park, and it's called Bow Pond. I said, well, where is it? And she said, well, it's really weird. She said, but there are three streets around this pond called Bow, Arrow, and Quiver.
Oh, my goodness.
And it just keeps happening like that all the time. It's just crazy.
What it reminds me of, Peter, is it's when, you know, when I was learning about numerology, and my teacher, Antonio, would always say to me, you know, people would say, well, I've been given this name at birth, but how do you know this name carries my code? And my parents didn't even know what to name me, but somebody told them, and they couldn't come up with a name, so they agreed to it. But it's all those synchronistic events that create a frequency, an imprint for that moment in time that then filters out from there. So people don't even know where somebody may have seen a bird fly by and a feather float down, you know, and then said, oh, I'm going to name these streets this, or whatever the case is. There's always something that leads to something else. It's this, you know, and we may not always know the reason why.
And we don't need to know the reason why. We just have to pay attention to the actual synchronicity that happens. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, when you're talking about this, first of all, I find it fascinating about Catherine Maltwood's work. But then even just thinking around where we live, that, you know, you have these areas that you really resonate with. And I, from your perspective, these places in Victoria that now you're aware of, were they places prior to this that you really felt drawn to energetically?
That's a great question, and the answer is some of them have always stood out as being very significant places, and others were little mysteries. So this Bow Pond, hardly anybody that came had ever been there, and it's just a magical duck pond with these three magnificent old willow trees in a form of a triangle on the banks of the pond.
Mm-hmm.
It's very serene and quiet, and it's in a neighborhood, so it's sort of surrounded by homes, but it's just a beautiful place of tranquility and serenity that most people have never been to. On the other hand, one of our local signposts, Mount Doug, it would be considered to be a special place for a lot of people, and it absolutely is. It's the part of Cancer, the boat, and it's very significant. So both would be true. Some unknown gems and some very well-known ones.
So if somebody would have, I'm wondering what you would suggest for people. If somebody would have an interest in examining the landscape and trying to decipher these 12 points in their local area, how would you suggest they go about that? Would they take?
Well, that's a great leading question. They could come and join my Ambassadors of Light program, because every month we're doing it. I'm taking people on the journey, and I'm sending them out into their own areas to find these spots. So it's www.myheartcenteredjourney.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Ambassadors of Light program, and we meet twice a month on a Thursday evening at 5:30 West Coast time. And some of the time on both of those classes, they're hour-long classes, I help people to do their own alchemical journey. And all the information is archived, so people can go back into the first two classes. So, for example, next Thursday is my next show. We'll be talking about what happened in our Taurus workshop, and some people who are on the call will reflect about where they went to. And this is all around the world, so there are people on the call from Australia, from Maui, as well as different sites around North America. So people will start sharing their stories, and it will give other people ideas about their own areas. And, of course, energetically, things just pop up, and you choose to go to places, and you tune into that place. But it doesn't matter if you're wrong, you see. It's an adventure, and if you're wrong, like in Aries, if it's not the right place, it doesn't matter, because it will probably pop up as a place in the future again.
Mm-hmm.
So long as you go with the right intentions to any place, because the earth is dying to work with us at this point, and so are the stars. And so, you know, when you go out into the night sky, you just look up, and you look at the constellations, and you look at the star systems, and you start tuning into them and getting an understanding of them. And then you go and stand in a beautiful spot on the side of a lake under a beautiful tree, then you've done it. You don't need to know the landscape features particularly. You just go to places that you're drawn to and just allow yourself to be led and guided. What it does do is you begin to see your home in a different way. You see your city in a different way. You start ignoring the buildings and looking at the land and the features and the way it's shaped. It's just beautiful.
It certainly is a lesson in as above, so below.
It certainly is. Yeah, and, of course, we're into Gemini and Mercury and Hermes Trismegistus right now, so that's a good line, Cyrilla.
Well, I am the upside, Peter, so... Okay, Peter, I want you to share with everybody. I know you gave a little bit of information about your bi-monthly telecalls that you have, but I want you to give information about your radio show and how people can get in touch with you.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, so my main website is www.petertongue, my name, Peter, T-O-N-G-U-E, just like in the mouth, petertongue.com. And a lot of the information is on our website there. And all of my radio shows are archived. There's over 90 of them now. And I've interviewed what I consider some of the best spiritual experts in the world, as you do, Cyrilla. And they're all archived there. Or you can go to Voice America, the Seventh Wave Network, which is the spiritual network of voiceamerica.com. And my show goes live at noon on Wednesdays, West Coast time. But almost everybody listens to the show's archives. People download them, iPod them, and listen to them when they walk into work or doing their gardening, whatever it is. And that's a very powerful... As you do, Cyrilla, really work hard to get down to the nitty-gritty of the person's story and not waste any time. So we really, in an hour show, get a lot of detailed information of that person's, often that person's, life's work. And so I've just had interviews with James Tiburon and John Wadsworth, the astrologer from Glastonbury. So people who are interested in finding out more about that, definitely listen to John. He was on last Wednesday, May 25th. And so please do listen into that. And then my sort of central core piece for the Ambassadors of Light program is www.myheartcenteredjourney, spelled E-R-E-D, the American way, .com, myheartcenteredjourney.com, and there's all sorts of bits and pieces on there as well, including the Ambassadors of Light program, which I do every other Thursday. There's free meditations connected with that and all sorts of archived material. So it's worth checking those out. And I also do private one-on-one consultations and counseling, particularly around people with serious illness and also around people who are wanting to become awakened and enlightened. It's a beautiful journey, and I bring the alchemy experiences into all of that. And just finally, while I'm giving myself a plug, back to the alchemy, what I now know, Cyrilla, is what the alchemy did was put me back in touch absolutely and profoundly with the earth itself, with the mineral kingdom, with the precious metal kingdom, with the regular metals kingdom. So now when I go and do this work in the landscape features, I know I've got this deep and profound profound connection with the very material of the earth itself, which also, by the way, wants to become transcended and transformed and enlightened. As we move from an iron age to a golden age, that transformation of the land itself also needs to take place. It's not just the human beings who are changing, it's the very nature of Mother Earth herself going from this iron age to this magnificent golden age of peace. And we're part of that, and we all need to go through this transformation together.
And Peter, I don't think I can say anything else about how wonderfully talented and open-hearted you are. I think that the way you express yourself and what you offer people, and through your radio shows when people listen, I mean, the information and your intention behind everything is so pure that I'm just going to leave it at that, because we've had such a great show. We've covered so much information. As always, I've learned a ton, Peter, which is why I love our conversations and have such gratitude for them. So we're going to end it there today. I'd like to thank all the listeners for joining us and look forward to connecting with you again next month. And as we go through these changes and these incredible times, I encourage everyone to just go with the flow, keep your energy flowing, and until next time, namaste.